Greetings from the Southern Cohort of the 2019 UC Coro System-Wide Leadership Collaborative. Our cohort project is entitled Best Practices for Leading Campus System-Wide Change Projects, and our deliverables include the production of podcast interviews with influential people in the area of change management, theory, and applications. My name is Daniel Jeske, a professor of statistics and the vice provost of administrative resolution at the University of California at Riverside. I'm joined in this interview by my cohort colleague, Jacqueline Norman, the campus architect and assistant vice chancellor for planning, design, and construction at the University of California at Riverside. Our guest in this podcast is Jerry Bamati, the chief financial officer and vice chancellor for planning, budget, and business and administrative services at the University of California at Riverside. Jerry is a prominent change agent at our university, and today he will be sharing some of his thoughts on how to successfully manage change initiatives. Jacqueline began our interview by asking Jerry to talk about his background.
Please tell us a little about your background and experience with change management.
I've been in higher education administration for about 40 years as a vice chancellor, vice president, and organizational change has probably been the largest issue, maybe a half dozen to 10 major automated administrative systems. Natural disaster or two.
I think I've heard you say you've worked for a number of presidents and CEOs. How many?
Kim is the 28th that I've worked directly with.
That's quite a sampling of different styles that you have to work with to move change through the systems.
Yes.
Maybe that feeds into this question about the people side of change management. What does that really refer to?
Right off the bat, to me, part of it is trust. Somehow, if you're going to work with people on change, they may agree or disagree with you, but if you can't earn their trust about what you're trying to do, it's going to be very difficult to get anything done.
Is part of the people side of change management recognizing when you need to make adjustments to your plans?
As much as anybody could sit down and map out a plan going forward, things will change over the time period of that planning process, and you need to have a way to be able to adjust and make some course correction. Some people make mistakes, in my opinion, where they're so invested in the process that even though everything's screaming, this isn't going to work, their focus now has moved to, we got to get it done and say, I got it done.
What makes it so hard for them to see that?
Because you're admitting defeat. So you worked for a year on something, and now you're going to go tell somebody, I don't think this worked. Maybe you're the one that suggested the whole plan. And now you have to go tell somebody, likely, that, you know, it isn't going to work. And you have to come up with, what should we do then, if not this? Do we get rid, stop everything? Do we come up with a different? Did we learn something that says, gee, we should have gone left rather than right? Those are difficult, in my experience, for people, for most people, to be willing to accept. Because once you're so invested in something, I believe human nature for a lot of people, not all, is I'm going to focus not on the project so much now and the institution I'm trying to support. I'm going to focus on, I got to be able to say, we finished this.
Do you think there are any kind of universal symptoms of change or problems with change management that one might look for?
If you're losing the trust or have lost the trust and confidence of everybody you're working with to make the project successful, I think you got to sit back and go, is this going to work? Because it can't work without this team of people working on it.
So if you're new to an organization and you're a change leader, it must take some time to get the trust and the credibility. I mean, just even understanding the environment you're in. So do you want to be a little bit slower to introduce change in that situation?
The organization may be new. The issues and activities may not be.
When Jerry arrived at UCR, he inherited a brand new budget model that was being instituted at our campus.
I spent probably 6 months when I came here trying to understand, and I'd say daily, at some point in some part of the day, the budget model that had been implemented here a couple years before, because I felt that was critical to be able to then try to look at any changes. I felt I had to be competent in being able to go out and talk to people about what is the problem. And although I had some instinctive ideas of what those problems might be, I think you have to get to it at a detailed level so you can be able to say, here's what I believe is the problem. And then test that to see if anyone believes it. If people don't believe it that you're going to have to work with, you have to kind of reassess that. And in the case of the budget model, most people, it resonated with them when we came out with this list that, yeah, those do look like problems. Some were, many were identified during the discussion. Some were brought up, were new. But I think people felt at least there was some confidence that they had that the people talking to them at least had done an analysis and understood issues that somewhat resonated with them.
Could you share your thoughts on what you think is so different about change in higher education versus change in the corporate world? And what does it imply as we move forward with changes on a UC campus?
When I was at the University of Arkansas, I was offered a job at the Walmart Corporation. So I went up to Bentonville and spent some time up there. What I recognized was there, a position like mine would just go out, tell all the people, here's what we're going to do tomorrow. Get on board or leave. That was really what they told me people. At a university, of course, as you know, it's a shared governance structure. And so the whole decision-making process is so different. You have the faculty, which is a powerful component of the institution. And if the faculty aren't going to be on board for some major thing, now, again, you know, if it's something that has nothing to do with faculty, they probably don't care. But the budget process, I think they would care about. I think there's many things that they would care about. Then you're going to have to get them on board. You're going to have to get the staff on board. The students, I mean, sometimes they're not engaged, but many times, depending upon the issue, they would be. And so I think you have to pay attention to them. And so you're somewhat dealing with almost a political situation more than you are a strict hierarchical organizational structure where the decisions come down from the top and that's how you move forward. Here, the whole decision-making process is very, very different. So the structure is so different that you cannot take what works in the corporate world and assume it will. And I've hired a number of people that didn't have background in higher education, came from the corporate world. And in my experience, that's been their main issue to learn early on, if they could learn, that it's a different environment. You have to work differently to initiate and institute change or adjustment. You can't just send out a memo and say, effective tomorrow, although we do send out some of those from time to time, you'll see them. Effective tomorrow or next week, we're going to be doing this. Because inevitably, a bunch of people might say, well, why is that? Or I'm opposed to it, or whatever the issues might be that they come up with there. So they're very different environments.
It can even be different between universities, right? The shared governance structure is so strong at UC,
yes.
Maybe not so strong elsewhere.
I agree. I think even the boards of regents are very different. An appointed board, an elected board, who's on the board, the size of the board, the leadership of the board, all those, in my experience, can have major impact on the operation of and culture of the campus.
One of the challenges with change is figuring out what needs to be changed and what shouldn't be. What's the path for figuring that out?
Clearly, identifying the problem, or what someone would identify as the problem, and suggesting then and projecting how a solution or a couple of different options of solutions would improve the situation is critical to go forward. I mean, because you've got to build trust, get confidence from people that you're communicating with, and so they have to have some reason to believe that you've identified a problem and that they believe it too, and that the options that you're talking about for solutions they see as positive as well.
Do you see that there are any advantages or disadvantages specifically of having a centralized change management office?
You probably know I eliminated the centralized change management office here at UCR. And the reason I did that is I believe it's essential to have expertise to manage and lead a major change. I'm adamant that it can't be generic, and that's what we had. So we just had people that says, whether you want to do something in utilities or the student system or the financial system or you name it, these people would manage. I don't believe that can be effective because I think those people leading that effort, they do need to have some background skills in certain areas, but they have to be in some ways subject matter experts in what they're going to lead, because otherwise it just won't work. Getting the right people for a major project. So if we're implementing a new financial system and we're talking about that, I think you would have to bring in my opinion, people to help lead that. But I think they have to be subject matter experts in that area and not generic.
So resistance to change is probably inevitable.
Yes.
How would you deal with that? What are the effective strategies?
You have to be willing to engage and bring back information and responses. Sometimes, almost always, people will raise issues that are good issues. And it may mean that you have to change some of your assumptions you made along the line. But I think that helps with the trust and the confidence for everybody. We're all making up assumptions about what this change might be. We're coming up with a whole set of assumptions for what will happen in the future. It can't be 100% accurate. So you do want and need feedback from other people. And sometimes the people that are adamantly opposed to it, they have reasons that are vary from, we've always done it this way and I don't want to be trained in something new or whatever it might be, to I have some substantive reasons to bring up of how this will impact this particular transaction activity or whatever it might be. You need to know that in order to figure that into the change.
Sometimes it could be fear, right, that they might lose their job.
Many times in my experience when people have implemented new automated systems, they have indicated that there would be great efficiency, great savings, and oftentimes that there'd be less staff. My experience is with these new automated systems, the complexity of them requires a higher level staff or someone with more training, and that it's rare that you can save money. What you should get out of them, and often do get out of them, mostly get out of them, is great additional services and benefits to the campus, whether you're a student, faculty, or staff. So maybe we didn't cut down the number of staff, maybe we didn't save anything, but now a faculty member goes, wow, it's so much easier to do my grades or to do this or to do that or in sponsored programs. I used to have to do all these things to get a grant in, and now the new system is so slick. So you want that. We should expect that. I think there's a fear often that, okay, this is management's way of cutting out a bunch of staff, and so at the end of the day, I might not have a job. And so I think you have to address that directly with people as well. Again, my experience is that generally does not happen.
How do you go about determining the necessary resources to implement a proposed change?
I think you have to work with people that you can kind of put together something that's a reasonable starting point, again, to go out and share with people, say, hey, we think this might do it, and be willing to take that feedback. So it's a trial and error process to be able to come up with something, depending upon the project. For larger, more complex projects, you have to make a lot of assumptions. And so I think you have to set up a draft of that, and you have to share that with people, especially subject matter experts. And you need to eventually find somebody who's done some of this before. Maybe you've done it so you can evaluate it yourself. Or you need to bring somebody in with a fresh set of eyes to look at it and say, does this seem reasonable? As you continuously evaluate it, you might find, and likely will, that too much here, not enough here, or not enough overall, or whatever it might be.
So I think you could say cost overruns and misestimates with respect to time are two unexpected circumstances. It might be something more like expertise that is lacking.
Yes, I think all those are possibilities. Much as you plan for something, no matter what it is going forward, I think you have to recognize that you're going to learn something along the way, and it's going to require you to make some adjustments. You hope the adjustments are small, but you have to leave open the option. Adjustments could be significant.
What are viable strategies for a campus or the UC system when managing simultaneous changes?
The first thing I would suggest is someone needs to evaluate whether that's feasible. And I'll give you the example where we've been implementing UCPath. So that's a payroll personnel system. When I came here in 2018, the plan was to start the process to implement a new financial system. I didn't think that made sense because, not that we didn't need a new financial system and there wasn't good reasons to suggest we needed it, the overlap between the people working on the two was like 80%. And so how much can you ask people to do? So I think you have to be very careful with having too many changes, because human nature is people can only tolerate so much change at one time, that they need to have some piece of stability that's out there as well.
We've had some experience with new systems on this campus. You've already mentioned UCPath. Some of us wonder if there could be backup systems running in parallel, and before you really convert, maybe people are doing it both ways so that when bugs are found.
Sure.
But is that common standard practice?
My experience is you do, because it's a large risk if somehow something doesn't work. And so my experience is you do have some, you know, not years, but some months of overlap. It's been useful in my experience to have some pilots. So in the college, maybe you find a smaller college and say, okay, let's run this out on them so that you can hopefully be successful there. And then other faculty go, you know, it worked over there, or they had a problem, but they fixed it. And so now they're going to roll it out to somebody else there. So I think that's been more helpful, to take some pilots like that around the campus, which means you do have to run concurrent for a while. So you have some additional costs, but I think they're worth it, because you have more successful implementation.
How do you measure the potential for a proposed change to bring about improvements?
Depending upon what the project is, I think you can get information from other campuses that have perhaps implemented similar things, and what they see as the outcome there. So I think that's also part of then making sure the team are subject matter experts, because if you do have subject matter experts in that particular change, you should be able to have people that can more precisely model some of these things. And then again, share them with the people that you're going to have to rely on to help successfully implement.
This has been really informative for us, and we appreciate it. Maybe we could just close by having you give us your wisdom on reasons that change management projects succeed and why they don't.
Sure. You know, to me, it's simpler than more complex. So, you know, my degrees are in math and statistics, so it's often I look for things that are, where's the formula? How do you come up with something that just says you put this in here and this will be the outcome? For these things, I think the main elements are what I mentioned before: trust, communication. You have to have some subject matter expertise, and I think it's helpful if it's with the leadership of that project. You know, there's relationships with people. At the end of the day, there's few projects that have nothing to, that are change management, they have nothing to do with people. And so worrying about and being attentive to those people strikes me as one of the key elements of any successful change management system. So, and again, the ones I mentioned before, you have to identify clearly the problem and why you think, and see if you can get agreement that that is the problem and that these solutions will actually address the problem.
Jacqueline has told me about the artwork that's coming to the campus, the revolving artwork that says things change, and then when it turns, it says change things. It seems very topical for what we're talking about today. Change can be good.
Right? Change can be good. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was good talking with you.
We've enjoyed talking to you. Thanks.
All right. Good.
The music in this podcast is entitled The Fifth Life by Circus Marcus.